Hello and welcome to Science World. Scientists have said that the typhoon that recently caused so much death and destruction in the Philippines was one of the strongest storms ever to make landfall. But in the aftermath of that tragic storm, some are wondering if man-made climate change can be blamed for causing the typhoon. For those of us who love dogs, there's nothing like being greeted by your poochie happily wagging his tail, but a new study has revealed that a dog's tail wag can actually communicate much more than that. U.S. health officials this week recommended that more Americans should be taking cholesterol-lowering drugs called statins in order to help prevent heart attacks and strokes. And scientists who study the sun say that a major solar event is about to take place. They're saying that the sun's magnetic field is about to reverse or flip its polarity. A solar physicist at California Stanford University says not to worry, though, we'll be okay. He joins us on today's one-on-one segment to tell us more about this major solar event. This and more are coming up for you on VOA's Science, Health, and Technology magazine, Science World. Days after Typhoon Haiyan brought destruction and tragedy to the Philippines, the country's climate change commissioner has made a passionate plea for a global deal to cut greenhouse gas emissions. Henry Ridgewell asked scientists and policymakers whether the devastation is the latest symptom of global warming.
Scientists say Typhoon Haiyan is one of the strongest storms ever to make landfall. But could man-made climate change be blamed for causing the typhoon? Bob Ward is from the Grantham Research Institute on Climate Change at the London School of Economics.
There's certainly strong circumstantial evidence because we know that the strength of tropical cyclones, hurricanes, typhoons depends very much on sea surface temperatures. They act as the fuel, and we've got very warm waters in the Pacific at the moment, which have been increasing because of climate change, and those very warm waters are what powered this typhoon.
Ward says the intensity of storms seems to be increasing.
It's less clear what impact climate change might be having on the frequency. Our models are not very clear at the moment, but we might expect in the future that we might even see fewer, but those that do occur will be much stronger than we're experiencing now.
On the ground in the Philippines, in places like Tacloban City, the destroyed infrastructure means authorities and aid agencies are struggling to distribute food and water. Benedict Dempsey of Save the Children says accurate forecasts meant some aid workers were in place when the storm hit.
Half a dozen people went in, actually into the path of the storm, in order to be prepared for the response in Tacloban and elsewhere in the Philippines.
And, says Dempsey, aid agencies are having to adapt to more frequent natural disasters of this kind.
Between around 2002 and 2011, on average, over 260 million people a year are being affected by disasters. And so we're seeing the reality of these trends acting out on the ground, and it's absolutely something that we're having to prepare to respond to in the future.
Benny Pizer, director of the Global Warming Policy Foundation, which is sceptical on man-made climate change, says the focus should be on disaster preparation rather than cutting greenhouse gases.
This was the 20th tropical storm to have hit the Philippines this year. So this is going to continue, and no matter what we decide on CO2, these storms will continue.
Climate change talks currently underway in Poland. The Philippine representative made an impassioned plea for an agreement to cut greenhouse gas emissions. Scientist Bob Ward says the delegates should pay close attention.
I think this typhoon will focus mind very much on the fact that if we squabble and delay in getting an agreement, we're going to see more and more of these kind of events with very, very severe human costs.
But observers at the Warsaw talks say a deal on cutting emissions still appears a long way off. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
If you're a dog owner, you probably already know just how expressive they often can be. Science World's Bob Doty has more.
A recent study published in the journal Current Biology is suggesting that among the many ways canines communicate with each other is with a wag of their tails. For many of us, seeing a dog wag its tail tells us that the pooch is probably friendly and approachable. But if that tail isn't wagging and is rigid, That, along with other body language from the dog, should serve as a warning to stay away, or at least be careful around the animal. The Italian research team behind the study said that dogs can recognize and then respond differently when other canines wag their tail to the right than they do when they wag it to the left. The researchers said that the reason dogs understand the right versus left tail wag is because they, much like we humans, have asymmetrically organized brains, meaning that the left and right sides of our brains are each responsible for controlling different things. These new findings are the result of a follow-up to a previous study. In their previous study, the researchers found that dogs tend to wag their tails to the right when they're feeling positive, such as when they see their owners. On the other hand, dogs wagging their tails to the left means that they're feeling some negative emotions, like seeing an unfriendly dog or are detecting some other kind of danger. The researchers said that this left and right tail wagging behavior is because of what's taking place in the canine's brains. A wag to the right is brought on by activation on the left side of its brain, while activity in the right side of the brain produces a wag to the left. While this right versus left wagging behavior means something to other dogs, the researchers say that they're probably not purposely displaying this behavior to communicate with each other. Instead, it's just an automatic response due to left side or right side brain activation. But the team also points out that this behavior could serve a very helpful purpose to people like dog owners and veterinarians as another way to better understand what's going on with the animal. For Science World, I'm Bob Doty.
This week, U.S. health officials release new guidelines on preventing heart attacks and strokes. Science World's Doug Bernard has the story.
The new heart health advice is calling for twice as many Americans to consider taking cholesterol-lowering drugs called statins. The medical experts offering the new guidelines identified four groups of people for whom statins would help the most: those with heart disease, people over 40 with type 2 diabetes, people with elevated levels of bad cholesterol, and those over 40 with a high risk of getting heart disease within 10 years. About 36 million Americans are currently being recommended to take statin medications. With these newly released guidelines, that number will double to 72 million people who will be advised to take the cholesterol-lowering drug. The new guidelines still emphasize the importance of a healthy diet and exercise in avoiding heart disease and stroke. Heart disease is the leading cause of death worldwide, and high cholesterol leads to hardened arteries, and that can cause a heart attack or a stroke. For Science World, I'm Doug Bernard.
And speaking of heart health, it's time once again for the Science World Quick Quiz. According to health experts and medical researchers, what time of the day do most heart attacks take place? Is it A, morning, B, afternoon, or C, evening? And today we have a bonus question for you, too. According to researchers, what day of the week has the highest occurrence of heart attacks? Think about it and see if you can come up with the right answers. We'll give you the correct answer in just a few minutes from now.
Thanks for listening to VOA Science, Health, and Technology News Magazine, Science World.
Vietnam is planning to develop a vibrant digital economy in the next 10 years, but most of the computer software used there is pirated, with users experiencing an epidemic of malware attacks. Marianne Brown reports from Hanoi.
Vietnam's information, communications, and technology sector has grown rapidly over the last 10 years, and the government has high hopes for its future, with plans to become a center for information technology, or IT, outsourcing in the next decade. But to capture its share of the knowledge economy, experts say more has to be done to address cybersecurity in Vietnam. One major stumbling block is malicious software, known as malware, which is used to disrupt or damage computer operations, steal data, or access private computer systems. Vietnam is consistently among the top five distributors of spam and malware in the world, says Michael Mudd, chair of the Information Technology, Intellectual Property and Telecommunications Committee at the American Chamber of Commerce. He says Vietnam is facing a malware epidemic, mainly because of lack of awareness about the problem.
In the countries which have been involved in IT a bit longer, they are more aware of antivirus program. Everywhere I go in Vietnam, I look in places and offices and stuff like this, and hardly any computer, apart from the very biggest ones, are ever protected by any antivirus program at all.
The issue of malware is a very reactive one. You do not do anything until it hits you, says Wahab Yusuf, vice president of the South Asia region for global computer software company McAfee.
I think the awareness is definitely increasing, but there is a sense of laissez-faire, I'm not being affected or I wouldn't be hit by it. But the awareness is increasing. But compared to Singapore, which is a much smaller and concentrated country and community, I think it is lesser. In terms of the awareness and maturity. But it's definitely on the rise.
The use of pirated software is one of the main ways malware can access computer systems. According to US-based Business Software Alliance, around 81% of computers in Vietnam use pirated software. Mudd says infected computers could take up to 20% of available bandwidth, incurring substantial economic costs. Compromised computers can be used to launch attacks on other computers. The economic implications can have a national impact, says McAfee's Yusuf, because malware has the potential to disable national infrastructure. He gives the example of cash machines.
And we've heard so many stories about, in the past in Europe, in America, where ATMs are brought down and countries are made to suffer because ATMs are not available for 2 weeks. Right? So stuff like issues like that, which affects a country and can actually bring the country's economy down to its knees.
Mudd says to tackle the problem, Vietnam does not need more antivirus scientists with four-year degree programs, but an army of IT plumbers who can maintain computer systems properly and get rid of the preloaded malware coming in with the machines. He says to achieve Vietnam's IT dreams, education about cybersecurity should start early, even at school age, so people understand the value of investing in legitimate software and antivirus programs. This is Marianne Brown for VOA News in Hanoi.
A smelly invasive bug, appropriately called the stink bug, continues to spread across the United States, alarming both farmers and scientists. Researchers are working on measures to control this destructive bug, but some of those measures come with their own worries. Tom Bonsi has this report.
One of the ways scientists are following the spread of the brown marmorated stink bug is by setting traps. There are four traps at the edge of this blueberry field at Oregon State University's North Willamette Research Farm.
So it looks as if we have at least three in this one.
OSU entomologist Vaughn Walton is looking for a brown bug with a body in the shape of a medieval shield and distinctive white stripes on its antenna. It's about the size of the fingernail on your ring finger. And it's called a stink bug for good reason.
This looks like a live one over here.
He is alive.
Oh, yeah.
So let's give you an opportunity to smell a brown marmorated.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's very slight. It's a little bit sweaty
person.
Socks, I guess I would say.
So it's got many people say it's a cilantro-like flavor.
Cilantro?
Yeah. And so there are some of the people in my lab that used to like cilantro, now they hate cilantro.
Here's why this bug invasion raises alarms. A stink bug can transmit that flavor into berries and fruit when it feeds. It can hide in wine grape clusters and then taint the juice when the grapes are crushed. Early season attacks cause berries and nuts to shrivel. Stink bug bites leave blemishes on vegetables. U.S. Department of Agriculture research entomologist Tracy Leskey says the greatest crop damage has been reported in the Mid-Atlantic region. She works on fruit trees in West Virginia.
Left untreated, it would be a substantial loss. So in places where, we are not controlling the insect for experimental purposes, we easily see 100% injury in those fruit.
North America has more than 200 native stink bug species, but farmers don't worry about most of them. They're focused on this more voracious variety that comes from East Asia. Scientists first detected it in the United States in Pennsylvania in the late 1990s. Von Walton says the invasive species has multiplied and spread in all directions from there.
They're really good hitchhikers, so they move on cars, on cargo, on trains and stuff like that.
The Asian stink bug has now been detected in 40 U.S. states and several Canadian provinces. Back in Oregon's Willamette Valley, the bug is showing up in commercial crops for the first time this year. Farmer Michelle Armstrong and her fiancé grow sweet corn and vegetables in the area.
And hopefully we'll learn how to control this pest, but we definitely see it as a major threat.
Powerful insecticides do kill the bug, but also take out beneficial insects farmers want to keep around. So other options are getting a look. One is mass trapping using pheromone lures. The Oregon State Science Team says the long-term solution probably involves bringing in the stink bug's natural predators. Researcher Walton says those exist in East Asia.
There's a wide range of parasitoids and predators from there. We've imported them. They're in quarantine. You can't release them because they can potentially affect other good bugs that we don't want to be affected.
The Agriculture Department says it will take several more years of research before scientists are more certain there won't be unintended consequences from introducing another non-native species onto U.S. farms. For VOA News, I'm Tom Bonsi near Aurora, Oregon.
Do you think you have the right answer to this week's quick quiz? Well, let's find out. According to health experts and medical researchers, what time of the day do most heart attacks take place? Is it A, morning, B, afternoon, or C, evening? The answer is A. According to researchers and medical experts at Harvard University, morning or during the last phase of sleep has been identified as the peak time for not only heart attacks, but for other types of cardiovascular emergencies such as sudden cardiac death, rupture or aneurysm of the aorta, pulmonary embolism, and stroke. As for today's bonus question, what day of the week has the highest occurrence of heart attacks? Well, several studies have indicated that cardiovascular emergencies like heart attacks tend to happen more on Mondays than any other day of the week, and less so during the weekends. Thanks for playing along with us on this week's Science World Quick Quiz. We'll have another brain teaser for you again next week.
Listening to Science World on VOA. You can also find us on the internet. Our new webpage and blog can be found at voanews.com/science.
Scientists are keeping an eye out for a huge solar event that is about to happen. The sun is about to reverse the polarity of its magnetic field. Now, before you start to worry, I've been reassured by a scientist who is leading a solar monitoring effort at California's Stanford University that those of us on good old planet Earth will be okay. Dr. Todd Hoeksema is a solar physicist at Stanford and the director of the university's Wilcox Solar Observatory. And he joins us today for our one-on-one segment to talk about and explain this upcoming flip in the sun's magnetic field polarity and the work that he and his team are doing in monitoring the sun. The sun's magnetic field is about to flip, and I guess the first thing many folks will want to know is, could this be something dangerous for those of us on Earth or impact us in any way?
This is something that doesn't really have any negative effects for us here on Earth. It's something that happens every 11 years, and when it happened about 11 or 12 years ago, you probably didn't even notice.
What about other planets and other objects in the solar system? Will there be any solar system-wide impacts from this?
Well, what really happens is the large-scale magnetic field of the sun and the heliosphere changes. And the heliosphere is that bubble in the interstellar medium that the sun carves out with its solar wind. And the direction of that magnetic field is changing direction from pointing out of the sun in the north to pointing into the sun in the north.
What causes this flip in the sun's magnetic polarity?
It's a process that occurs every solar cycle where sunspots come up at mid-latitudes and low latitudes, and gradually the magnetic flux that comes up with those moves poleward. It takes a little while, and it erodes the polar fields that are already there and replaces them with the other direction.
Todd, since this flip in the sun's polarity is just a part of the 11-year solar cycle, it must also coincide with that part of the cycle called solar maximum. Is the sun at or near its solar max?
That's right. Most of the cycles last about 11 years. The last one, it turns out, was a little longer than usual. There's usually a process that goes from minimum, which occurred in 2008 or 2009, it takes about 3 years for the sun to get to be the most active, and then there's a longer period of about 6 years when it kind of cools off and gets a little less active. And we measure that with sunspots. So we count the sunspot number, the number of active regions on the surface of the sun, and that's really one of the ways that we measure it.
Lately, there has been a reported increase in solar activity. Now, is this typical when the sun's magnetic field is about to flip?
The flip of the field is related to magnetic activity, although there's not a one-to-one kind of relationship, but it always flips at the time when the sun is about the most active, within a few months or so. And so what we're seeing recently is more activity in the southern hemisphere, and that's the pole that's just about to switch or is switching right about now. The northern pole switched about a year ago, in the summer of 2012, and the northern hemisphere was active a little bit earlier. And that kind of all ties in with that whole process of the magnetic field coming from the sunspots, moving poleward and causing the reversal.
Does the sun's change in its magnetic polarity impact space weather?
Space weather is mostly associated with the active regions, the flares and the coronal mass ejections and the high-speed solar wind. And so the fact that the polar field reversal is associated with the maximum is really an indicator of when we're going to see more of this kind of activity. The other thing that's important is the high-speed solar wind and cosmic rays that are affected by it. So when the poles are flipping, there is no high-speed solar wind at high latitudes over the poles, and so we don't have quite as good as we have a little bit better shield for that reason from the cosmic rays that are coming in from the rest of the galaxy. So solar maximum is the time when the sun creates more particles. But the particles that come from the galaxy are actually shielded from us. And so the highest energy ones is something that we see a little bit less of right about now.
Todd, you and your colleagues at Stanford University's Wilcox Solar Observatory are monitoring this solar magnetic field flip. What do you and your team look for when you're doing this?
Every day since about 1976, we've made measurements of the sun's magnetic field. And every day it changes just a little bit. The sun rotates in about a month, and these active regions emerge, and we watch them. And so one of the measurements that we make is of the polar regions, and that's the one that is flipping right about now. In fact, at this most recent solar minimum, the polar field was about half as strong as it was at the previous minimum and the one before that. And that was one of the indicators that is used to make the prediction for the next solar cycle. So when we saw back in 2004 and 2005, that the polar field was a little bit weaker, we had our first inkling that this solar cycle, this is solar cycle number 24, would be a little bit weaker than the ones that have preceded it. And sure enough, it turned out to work that way. There's still some controversy about that. The prediction of the solar cycle is one of those things that's a little bit trendy in the sense that you rely on the trends of what has happened in the years before or in the cycles before, and we haven't had that many to observe. But it seems like when the polar field is weak, the next solar cycle is weak. And so what we're looking forward to now is when that polar field builds up over the next couple years, is it going to be a strong field or a weak field? And that will tell us something about the next solar cycle that's going to come along in another 10 years.
That was Dr. Todd Hoeksema, a solar physicist at Stanford University and the director of the university's Wilcox Solar Observatory in Stanford, California. That's it for this edition of Science World. Thanks so much for listening. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to visit our new website and blog. The address is voanews.com/science. Along with program information, you'll find stories, links, and much more. So stop by and visit us on the internet. Science World has been produced by Bob Doty, and I am Rick Pantaleo. Be sure to join us either online or on your radio next Saturday and Sunday as we check out the latest in science, health, and technology on Science World.